Modifications to the agenda? Is there anyone here visiting who'd like to see an agenda item moved up or down on the agenda? Okay, the motion is to modify the agenda to move 13B to 3B and 14 to 3C. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as modified? Trustee Dart. Is there a second? Trustee Gendrich. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, in coordination with the Brown County Drug Task Force and the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the Village of Alloway will be accepting any unwanted prescriptions and over-the-counter medications for proper disposal. This will take place here at the Alloway Village Hall on Saturday, October 26th, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Thank you. Are there any other announcements? Mr. Lang?
Just a reminder that on October 22nd at 6:30 is the public listening session for the deer and turkey potential hunt. And also on October 22nd at 10 a.m. at Green Elk Park, we'll be doing a public presentation of a check from Mr. Dick Resch in the tune of $100,000 for the East River, Resch Family East River Trail reconstruction.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Trustee Kopich, one other item is the Alloway Beautification Committee Awards scheduled for November 1st, I believe. Is that correct? At the pavilion.
Could someone send me that outlook request for the Beautification Awards? Or to the whole board? Nice. That's the best way to get it on my calendar. November 1st, Brett?
Yeah, it's Friday night.
Any other announcements? Hearing none. Others will. we'll move on to old item 13B. Action from the Public Works Committee, minutes dated from October of 2013. Recommendation to proceed with evaluation of Verizon proposal for self-communication facility at the Webster Avenue Water Tower. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
I would actually suggest that this one's complicated.
Can you do something complicated?
Oh, I would suggest this one's complicated enough. We may want Mr. Merritt to present first.
Okay.
On.
Unless there are objections from the board, we'll suspend the rules and entertain discussion first.
There is a piece of information in your packet that explains this request. It is from Verizon. They would like to locate a cell communication facility in their water tower. What's a little bit different about this particular request is that this is a larger communications facility than what we're used to. The ground station needs to be probably 2 to 3 times larger than the ground stations we have right now that support the antenna located at the top of the tower. It's because of this high-capacity data network, and Verizon is interested in locating a facility at our tower, if that's possible. There are some suggestions in this summary that you have in your packet. For example, if we were to do this, we would want probably a longer-term lease than a normal cell tower arrangement because of the physical size of the facilities that are involved here. That we may want a condition in a contract where if the contract's terminated, we have the option of taking ownership of the facility, and maybe another condition. We told them that in order to consider this concept for that application, the structure would have to look like the neighborhood, look like the existing facilities. It would have to be properly landscaped and other features of that sort. We discussed it at Public Works. We didn't take action on it. We brought it to the board. The question at hand for you as a board is this something that you'd want to consider? We would do a fairly detailed evaluation of it. We'd look at the location of the building, where it could be. There's a couple of drawings in your package, which is the kind of the initial concept. It would be located alongside of the driveway. But that may not be the best location. We would want to look at things like the architecture. We'd want to look at noise. We'd want to look at how it would impact existing facilities. So it will require a bit of study to determine the feasibility of this. It also, we would want to interface with the neighbors on both sides in terms of what a concept would be, how it would impact them, like we did in the previous facilities where we put landscaping in to cover up some of the new structures. This would be the same type of situation. How would we deal with those issues? Then it would come back as a concept for the board to review and approve. So that's what we have at hand. It is an opportunity for us, but it requires some evaluation because it's more complicated than a typical case.
This was through Public Works, right? The recommendation was to proceed with the concept.
It was not into the board because this is more of it's a bigger decision, if you will.
But the...
There was no decision at
Public Works. Had no decision?
It was to bring it here for consideration of all of us because we didn't feel with the minority on Public Works that this was such a different facility. It requires air conditioning. It needs to be aesthetically incorporated with the other surrounding properties. It would probably require more screening.
Okay. I'm always interested in the Public Works Committee's decisions on this because everything that comes out of Public Works is just a recommendation to the board. But you've heard and thought more about this than the rest of the board has. Do you have any... Was the Public Works Committee leaning in any one direction or the other, or just that we should bring this in front of the board? Because to me, that means you didn't make it, you had no inclination whatsoever.
It was one, bring it in front of the board, and then two, explore it with the neighbor, explore it at this meeting. Because if people had a predominant feeling of, no, we don't even want to entertain this on Webster, then there wasn't any point in Craig and his staff spinning their wheels.
So there's nothing that we're missing, though?
No.
Look, this seems like a good concept as far as the Public Works Committee knows. We obviously want to check with the neighbors and make sure that everyone's on the same page. There's no guarantee that it's actually going to happen, but there's pretty much the feel in Public Works that let's proceed and explore this. Is that right?
Well, let's proceed enough to refer it to this meeting.
Okay. Well, then there was really no decision at Public
Works
whatsoever.
Correct. There was no solid decision either way.
Okay,
it was an exploration.
Okay. Trustee Gass, yes?
Well, I think it makes some sense just in terms of preserving internal staff resources. When there's an issue like this that could require some study, as Craig alluded to, and consultation with the neighbors and various other issues that, you know, we refer it to the board, you know, and see if there's any interest in pursuing it, because if the board as a whole says we don't even want to look at the concept, then there's nothing else to do. But if the board expresses a desire to at least investigate further, then my recommendation would be it gets referred back to Public Works to conduct it and finish that evaluation.
Yeah, I understand the concept, but I still want to kind of know if there's thinking that was done in Public Works that would be helpful to the board to. In my mind, when I read this, it's a no-brainer. Of course, what do we have? We have some staff time at risk here, but of course we would explore it. It's an opportunity to provide better service to the to our residents, and it's something that we've been hearing complaints about. So I'm used to getting recommendations from the Public Works Committee, even if the recommendation is just to explore, and not just that the recommendation is for us to talk about it as a full village. Trustee Zell.
Well, I spoke up against the next step, the next step to explore. Although this is a potentially lucrative lease for the village, the other option is available to Verizon, that is available to all the other carriers, and that's the ExteNet booster antennas. And I believe that this is more than what the neighbors bargained for. With a building of this size and the air conditioning requirement, so I spoke out against it, and I forwarded the information to the neighbor, to the immediate neighbor to the north, who is here today. So you know, this goes back to when we originally granted the first antenna lease to the first carrier. The carriers, I believe, are up to four or five on the antenna now, on the tower now, and I think this is just more traffic than what the neighbor should have to submit to. And then we've got the possibility of noise on the building. So I spoke out against it, but Lynn and I were the only two board members at Public Works. So we decided to bring it to you.
All right. As
instead of killing it at that point.
That's helpful. Thanks. I get it now. Okay. Any further discussion needed from Mr. Brent or information from Mr. Brent? We'll open it up to visitors then.
And the neighbor was not at the meeting.
Right. Okay. Good. Microphones. I asked if there is any further information needed from Mr. Brent by the board, and Trustee Green added that the neighbor that's here tonight was not at the Public Works meeting, so that this will be additional information for the entire board, including the Public Works Committee members of the board. All right, unless there are further questions, we'll open it up to our visitors. I'd like to hear first from the neighbor, or the potential neighbor for this new antenna.
Talk to your microphone so we can hear you.
Who would you like to talk into the microphone?
All of you. You don't talk to them. We paid for them.
We're doing the best we can. If we turn it up too much.
Checking, 1, 2, checking.
Can you hear this?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. My name is Nick O'Malley, and I'm a neighbor to the
north of the property.
Okay.
I'm at 2592 South Webster. And also, Kitty Wingert is here. She's also a neighbor. She's the immediate neighbor. I'm the immediate neighbor to the north of her. We've got a number of concerns regarding this development. There are a number of carriers already on the tower, and our major concern is that, you know, one concern is the traffic, the people coming and going to repair the tower, the technician types. Sometimes they'll come in with their vehicles, and they'll leave them idling there during the day, and can kind of create a disturbance during the evening. They'll come in, and after hours have lights on at night. Another concern is the hut that's in front of the building. So you can see this little hut here. That hut is being placed on the Webster side of the tower, not on the Heritage Hill side, on the Webster side. It also appears to be on the side facing the Winger property and near tower property as well. So that's also a major concern. On the back of that hut, there's a, you can see a kind of an air conditioning unit. The air conditioning unit actually can be seen directly from, or could be seen directly from, the Winger property. So that's a major inconvenience as well. And it appears that when a big hut like this goes in, that means there's going to be a lot of antennas on the tower. What you see there are three antennas. There's probably also antennas on the other side. Usually, if they have a hut like that, that means there's at least, you know, what they call carriers on the tower. There's at least not only three antennas, but there could be as many as 6 or 12. I'm not sure how many they've put in their application. That's creating a kind of an ugly sight on that tower. The tower is already a major landmark in that area, and I think it's a mistake to make it look that ugly. And there are some of the major concerns that we have. Any questions?
Mr. Barringer, I know we talked about this the last time. I don't know if it was the same carrier or a different carrier was working in this area with regard to the traffic. And have we had a lot? I know we had conversations with the carrier that we wanted them there at only certain times during business hours unless there was an emergency. Have we had any problems with the carriers not adhering to our agreement?
We have two carriers on the tower. We have two carriers.
Can you speak into one of the microphones? Sure.
We have two carriers on the tower right now. We did have three. One let their lease expire and removed all of their equipment. So we have two carriers. Part of the traffic is coming from the telephone company, which is not associated with the water tower. There's been a lot of maintenance on the telephone service that goes through the utility right away to the homes that are further to the west and to the north. That's probably a separate issue that we could address to maybe get them to relocate some of their facilities. But that they have a service box that's right there on the property line that's visible from the homes. And when we did some tracking to see how many visits were by the various companies, we found that the greater portion of all the visits was the telephone company itself. It wasn't associated with the cell towers. So that's a factor in this.
When we talk about visits, like how many is that? Like in a week or a day? Or
the two cell tower providers, normally they call us if they need access to our facility. Now, that means if they need to service an antenna or anything like that, or the power supply, they'll call us to schedule a visit. We get about probably once a month for each provider that they want us there to unlock a facility for them. But they do visit their facility for routine maintenance and go into their facility and do their checks on their facility and routine maintenance. You know, it's hard to say.
So that's separate from once a month that you rather visit at the time.
Sure. And, you know, that can be every week or it can be once or twice a month. It kind of varies. With regard to the air conditioning, that's a concern of ours, the noise of the air conditioning system. But the facilities that are there all have air conditioning too. So they're all air conditioned facilities. This one is just larger. The location we showed was the location we picked to get a plot on there. We already, in looking at it, decided that we would want to see that relocated somewhere else from where it's shown on that drawing as being a better fit, farther away from the houses. But it requires some exploration because there's underground facilities through that whole site.
Did we put any sort of natural barriers? I thought at one time we were going to try to plant trees or put some things up, either because of this or am I thinking of a completely different project?
We did on the when T-Mobile located on the west side of the tower, we had them plant some 12 to 14 foot tall shrubs along that backside to shield that building. We did have discussion with the adjacent property owner at that time about putting in a line of shrubs along the property line to shield the whole base of the tower. But it was decided at that point that that really wasn't necessary to go ahead and do that, and that could be done in the future. So there's some options like that. Right now, the tree line that is behind this building where it's shown, the tree line behind there, really probably isn't dense enough to shield the building to the extent that we would like. One option would be move the building closer to Webster and then have more landscaping behind it to shield it from the north.
Trustee Green?
Actually, Craig, I was just going to follow up with two questions for clarification. The number of antennas Verizon is asking for, we had not talked about multiple antennas, so I believe it's
don't
just...
Don't know at this point. There's no
know.
Application. This is a preliminary discussion. They've expressed interest. That was the first question we had. Mm-hmm. Are you really interested in this site? We don't want to spend any time on it unless you're serious. And they said they were. And then we said, well, what would the give us an example of what the facility would look like. Now, how many antennas would it be? My guess is, I think right now there is two sets. There's two providers, cell providers, and I think each has nine antennas. There's enough room in that tower for nine more antennas that would fit in between the antennas that are there. And if you look at it close, you can see that usually there's one taller antenna that's usually like 4 foot tall, and then there's usually a couple smaller ones that are like wafers that are fastened to the handrails. And this would be the same type of thing. There'd be a couple of wafers in each spot, and there'd be one smaller, you know, 4 foot antenna next to it. It would look something like that.
How many antennas came off with the one who did not renew their lease?
Nine
came off. Okay. And then placement of the building. I just wanted to clarify that one, because what we had talked about in Public Works was pushing it back, pushing it over, that placement wasn't static.
You know, we walked the site with Verizon, and we said, we're not sure that the village would be interested in doing this. Mm-hmm. But if we were, you know, here's a spot that you could look at that would be a starting point. Now, since we got the drawings, we looked at it. We looked at it from the underground utility standpoint. So, you remember at that time, we didn't know what size facility they were talking about. You know, we've since decided that there's probably three options that could be looked at. One is sliding the building closer to Webster so that it's more, same side of the driveway, but closer to Webster so it's the trees that are there shielded more from the north. Another option would be go to the south side of that driveway, which I like better because that's farther away from the residences. And then there's a third option that staff looked at, and that is the possibility of going behind the tower, adjacent, you know, right next to the shrubs on the west-hand side, and then landscape that area back there to close that area in, other than just the access where you can get into the building. So that might be a third option. We've asked them for information on the air conditioning noise levels and also where we could go look at a facility and see actually what does it sound like. So you can actually kind of tell. Is it, you know, at 100 feet from the building, is it noticeable or not? Does it sound like a home air conditioner at 100 feet from the building, or does it sound like an industrial air conditioner? You know, we do want to see one and see what it actually looks like. That'd be part of the evaluation, I think.
Trustee Gammage.
Perceived at least annual rental fee would be, any idea on that yet?
A reasonable amount higher than what we get now.
And what is that amount now?
We are in the $24,000 a year range on our rentals.
Per carrier or per?
Per cell provider. And this is a larger facility, I would assume, and a more permanent facility. I would assume that we would want to look at something greater than that.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Is it being open by now?
Yeah, but you don't have the floor yet. You can have the floor if you'd like it, sir.
I guess I think an action item there is to look at the size of the antennas. Depending on what, whether they're 3G, 4G, some of them can be quite big. So this size, length, diameter, that kind of thing on the antennas is an important question as well. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Jim O'Rourke, I'm with the Historic Illinois Society. I agree with Paul Zeller. I don't think that a large site there should be put in. We just had an intensive survey done of historic sites. Katie's house is one of the few individually eligible properties for the National Register. One of the conditions of that eligibility is the landscaping and the view from the front of the house. That neighborhood has three individually eligible properties, and once you start putting in modern buildings, you ruin the what's called the historic integrity of the area, and those properties may no longer be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. So the state, the head guy for the state historic preservation officer, Jim Greger, looked at the house. He looked at the three houses right in a row there and said that those are probably our finest historic houses in the area. Thanks. There were 13 properties, two village properties, a bridge, and those three houses are some of our best. Thanks.
Yes, sir. The floor is open for this issue.
I'll be back.
Hi. I'm 2680 South Webster. I'm almost a neighbor, too, but I'm not that concerned. It's just that Jason Arnold brought up some interesting concerns. First of all, regarding air conditioning, my recollection is there are baffles made. They cost some money, but they can reduce noise, so somebody could investigate that part. The question is whether those antennas can be disguised to make them look a little bit better. Is this sticking up there? Perhaps I can't. I don't know. I'm presuming that all these costs that might be associated with the landscaping and so forth would be Verizon's cost, not the village's cost. And next, with the issue that was just raised, as a condition for granting the approval, you could insist on design approval, make it more aesthetically compatible with the surrounding. I'm thinking of a couple of past instances in the village. One is the CVS Pharmacy, where the village board at that time insisted that they not have your cracker square design, made them do it something a little more pleasing. And then our old water pump station, which I had a really heavy part on, where we stuck in a residential area, but it looks like a house. I don't even know if you've all seen it. If you want to know, I'll take it on or something. It's no longer pumping water, but you know, things can be done. Architecturally, to make things better.
Thank you. Anybody else who'd like to speak? We'll take up the rules. Trustee Green.
Craig, can you clarify what's been discussed today regarding the architecture of the building?
We had told Verizon in the site visit that it would need to look like the Cotton House next door and the house to the north. It would have to be the same architectural style, the same siding, you know, windows and things of that sort. So that when you look at it, even though it's a small building, when you look at it, it would look similar to the other buildings adjacent to it. And they didn't have a problem with that. And if you look closely at the drawing, you'll see that they do actually show some of that a little bit. You can kind of see the siding and the windows, and it kind of matches up with what you see at Heritage Hill. Yeah, they don't see a problem with that. You
Anything else from our visitors that might have occurred to you at the last second? No one from Verizon is here, Craig? Trustee Guest?
I'll move to refer the matter back to Public Works for further investigation of the issues with the recommendation of the Public Works chairperson that we perhaps at the next meeting or the special meeting start that meeting on site at the water tower and to invite the neighbors to come over there so we can actually walk the land and Craig can be there and tell us what the thinking is in terms of location and just talk with the neighbors. I guess that's the motion.
Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? I'm sure that you checked with Mr. Is it Malley or O'Malley?
O'Malley.
O'Malley. They meet at 7 a.m. on Thursday. So.
That's fine. I'm going
to
do that.
Okay. They ask you to work around Mr. O'Malley's schedule rather than around our schedules with regard to Public Works meeting. Trustee Zeller?
I would like to add to the motion that a representative, at least one from Heritage Hill, be included as well. Because the neighbors knew nothing of this. I brought the proposal from Thursday to the neighbors. They had not been notified about this at all. So Heritage Hill must be notified as part of that. And if we're going to meet there, then
Trustee Guest,
we need all the parties available.
A friendly amendment?
That can be a friendly amendment.
To your motion. And Trustee Green, you okay with that? I'd
like to add another one, actually.
Okay.
That somebody from Verizon be there. Because if everybody's not on the same page and there's no point in exploring it, I just, in full disclosure, I think everybody needs to be there. Because otherwise, if Verizon's not on board with where this is headed, that's good information to know right up front.
Trustee Guest, is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay. That's fine by me. I don't want to postpone this because we can't get all the various players. So if someone from Verizon can't make it, I'd say you go ahead anyway and have the discussions. And
a question, okay. Are there other Verizon sites in the village?
No.
Okay. I was just curious about options.
There are no other Verizon sites at all in the village?
I don't think so at all.
Wow. Where are people getting reception at Verizon in the village?
I can tell you not on Webster.
I can tell you that too.
No. I remember when we talked about this
that all that is a permit. It's not our facility, so we really don't get involved in it other than additional use permit.
So we don't have any Verizon antennas on any of our property.
No.
Do you know if there are any? Are there any? Where are the? How many Verizon antennas are there, or locations are there in the village? Do you know that?
Well, I think the only other cell location is at Traders. So if they're not, they may be on Traders, but not on the other.
There's
buildings.
A flagpole on Riverside that
Mr.
Bell property.
And it still had one opening last I heard has been filled.
AT&T.
Right.
They're the only ones on there.
Okay.
They said they had room for one other carrier, though. So I think that one, and then does Verizon know about Extenet and what they're proposing?
This Verizon is the 4G build-up, which is what T-Mobile did. Their facility is a 4G facility. So you look at their antennas and so forth, it's similar. Yeah, there's a spot on that flagpole. I know that they are talking with someone about moving onto that tower, but I don't know who that is.
Thank you. All right, there's a motion and a second on the floor to refer this back to Public Works to hold that meeting on site at the proposed location and to invite the neighbors, including Heritage Hill and a representative from Verizon. Do I have that correct, Ms. Manning?
Yes.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Old item 14. Action regarding the petition. It's in your packet. Received expressing belief that the residents of Hilltop that the best use for the Hilltop apartment property would be to become green space and eliminate the past or future problems they have encountered. Before entertaining discussion and a possible action on this, I'd like to suspend the rules and invite any guests that we have might have in that area to speak on this issue. Are there any objections? Okay, we'll suspend the rules. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue who may have signed the petition or live in that area?
Maybe read the petition first.
This is from Mr. Mike Moore from August 28, 2013. This is a letter that went out to the neighbors, I believe. Is Mr. Moore here? It went out to the neighbors, right?
That's right.
I'm sure. Good afternoon, Hilltop and Somerset residents. Have you noticed how quiet the neighborhood has become since the Hilltop apartments are no longer for rent? No more cars exceeding the speed limit, threatening our children. No more ambulance rescue and police calls. The drug dealer after bar time, late night parties, excessive litter, and noise are gone. People moving in and out on a regular monthly basis who have no vested interest in maintaining the property nor the neighborhood. Maybe they have come to realize that splitting the rent by two at $500 a month doesn't attract quality neighbors. We now have the opportunity to create a green space where our children can gather and play without having to cross busy East River Drive and Lible Street. The lost tax revenue to the village is, of course, an issue, and we respectfully ask the village trustees to do the hard work and look for various grants that are available and apply for them before taking the easy way out and zoning the land for the same purpose to the same developer and or other developers who will have the only goal to maximize their profits without regard to the neighborhood safety and property values. We're asking for your help by authorizing a petition to express our beliefs that the best use of this property would be to become a green space and eliminate the past and future problems we have encountered. Thank you very much for taking time to read this letter, and hopefully your endorsement of such a goal is attainable and becomes reality. Please sign this letter with your address and return it to us postage free, and we will personally forward it to the village at the next meeting. Sincerely, Mike Moore. Is there anyone with us who'd like to comment with regard to this? Yes, sir.
To get to this case, however, I intended to address this anyhow. I'm opposed to the request of a petition for a number of reasons. Number one is cost. Regardless of granting grants that might become available, there'll be an ongoing maintenance cost. If you were to try to condemn this land, there'll be a cost associated with that. I don't think that they'll just be willing to sell it just like that. If you were to do what has been proposed on other situations and unilaterally revoking and rezoning, then I think you'll get sued and you will lose and it'll cost a lot of money. So that, I don't think that's an option. I kind of consider it a lack of need. I don't have to remind you that I certainly am not anti-recreation or anti-park, because I was heavily involved in the acquisition of more than two-thirds of the parkland we have today in the village, including Greenhouse Park and the soccer fields and the Nerdle League properties. Brad gave me some information today, which is already outdated, indicating that I guess the national standard is 10 acres of land for every 1,000 people. We currently have 36 acres of land per 1,000 feet, which is more than triple. So we're not lacking in green space at all. There's another park there within just a few blocks, and there's a statement made by F. Cox Cross, East River Drive is very dangerous. Well, that's not the only park in town like that. That occurs. There's one on Broadview. There's another one on East River Drive. There's two on East River Drive. So, sure, it's a concern, but that's not an overriding concern. If kids want to go into a park before they get in there without getting killed, it's done all over town, all over the county. My suggestion as a better alternative is to perhaps initiate contact with the owner and seek an alternative where it was there in the past, and perhaps persuade him to build a more upscale development. Better apartments, it costs more to bring in other people.
I don't know. To the best of my knowledge, there have been periodic problems in police. I don't live down there, of course, but I don't think it's been overwhelming. I know there was a couple of drug arrests a year or two ago, and I guess there's been some parties, but beyond that, I don't have that knowledge. But anyhow, it's my opinion, and hope that give these things consideration. You're always scratching for a buck of things. Everything's going up in cost, which I'm going to address at the next meeting. But I just don't. I don't see the need for it. We spend the money. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to this issue?
I disagree with you. If you have children, I'm Dad Duchenner, by the way, and this is a little group of people who want to park. I disagree with many of the things he just said. In particular, the most important one is the safety of our children. If our children need to go down to the park down by the river, the one that is a mere few blocks away, they either have to go through neighbors' yards or they have to walk on the streets. There are no good access to that park. East River Drive is a dangerous street. All you got to do is go down there and stand, and you'll see that. Just because we have other areas in this village that are dangerous to get here, that does not make it right. And that's about all I have to say about that. So,
thank you. Anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Yes, sir.
Thank you for your time. My name is Mike Moore. I live at 580 Hilltop. I've been before the board before. My home is about 500 feet away from the burnt out shell that's now disappeared. So I know firsthand what has happened at this location for the last 28 years. There's been several different owners of the property. The current owner, of course, is Mr. Harry Monto from Millcrest Lumber. No one's taken the time or the effort or the money to upgrade that piece of property, as far as I know. It's continually slid downhill, shall we say, over the last 35 years since it was built. No upgrades have been done. So you're getting a different type of people that are moving in there. It used to be a very professional, high-end type of facility. Now it's less than that, or it was less than that. And that's one of the reasons I decided to write this letter to my neighbors and have them try to support us in this effort to get a green area. I also have statistics. Responsibilities either ethically or morally, to upgrade it with sprinklers, firewalls, and the physical facility itself. You know, it's nice to paint the walls and maybe put in a piece of carpeting, but there's more to the building than just those aesthetics. And again, that has not been done in the last 4 years. Any comments, concerns, questions?
Any questions for a visitor? No. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Anyone else who'd like to speak? Yes, sir.
Pat Collins, 2210 Green Wall Street. I didn't come here prepared to speak on this topic, but the thing is, does anybody know the current zoning of that property?
Chris, can you verify the zoning?
It is on high density district.
Okay. What I would suggest the board do is look at their high density zoning and what the maximum can be built per certain size of land. Right now, I think your high density zoning is probably pretty wide open. So before you start getting petitions for building permits and all that stuff, it'd be great to review your high density zoning and maybe specify how many units can go into X number of space, and that might hopefully work on this problem. The problem you have before you and the residents have, it is zoned high density, and the person does have a right to rebuild. They can rebuild the structure just like it was, or they can change it. So maybe I think it's incumbent upon the board to do a little research ahead of time before this becomes before them, to look at the zoning laws, because you can't change them after the fact, but I think you can work on them in between in requests. So please look at your high density zoning and see what can be done as far as the density.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tracy, I'm going to ask you to comment on if there are other options with regard to PEDs and things like that that we might also be able to use. Anyone else would like to comment on this issue? Yes, sir.
You don't have any arguments with this property across the road here. We bought this and we got what we want, and that's the best thing that ever happened there. It's beautiful property, well maintained. I'm sorry that it didn't keep going. The economy got bad. That's really beautiful, well-maintained property. And they can talk about Hillcrest, they can talk about all they want. All they have to do is watch this property across the road. I've watched that. I've lived there for over 50 years. And that's good property. And it's nice, and whatever he does down there, I'm sure you'll have something like over here. I don't see anything wrong because that was there for a long time. And I'm sure that if they build, it's going to be something well money spent. So think about what you're going to do with it. I mean, the people that built next to it or bought next to it, it was something that was there when they built or bought next to it.
That's not true, sir.
What?
That's not true. Not true.
Excuse me, folks.
Mr. Moore,
we need to have people address the board only. Please.
And you can come to the podium.
Yeah. Think about what you're doing. You know, we lived here, and that got built, and I'm happy with it. Even before he built here, I had offers to buy my place out for a good price. And I said, no, I was here, and I want to stay here. And they built to please all of us. So think about it good what he can do with it. I hope everybody ends up happy with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Address that issue.
Yeah, could you please approach the podium?
That apartment was built after the homes were installed on Hilltop and peers, neighborhood friends, that there would be no apartment down there. It would remain a green area. Lo and behold, about a year and a half later, up goes the apartment. And no one said anything publicly about it. It was all done on the side. That's why we're upset. This is something that's happened before, and we'd be really naive to think that this could be a beneficial situation in our best interest. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to add to the discussion? Okay, we'll take up the rules. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I'll move that we take no present action on the petitions, that we instruct the Parks Director to determine what available grant funding might be available for acquisition, and that we bring the high-density zoning ordinance back to the next board meeting as a discussion item.
Trustee Kopisch?
Second.
Discussion? Tracy, would you be willing to add in some other development tools that we have to make sure that if indeed there are apartments rebuilt in that area, that they're built in such a manner that they fit better in with the neighborhood and the preferences of the neighbors?
Absolutely. The board has gone through what we call the plan district development before for other developments in the community, including the apartments right across the street from us. And the process is very extensive. The developer needs to go meet with staff initially and go through their development proposal. The staff includes fire inspector, the public works director, myself, and the building inspector, and we make sure that the development would meet all the codes and everything that's required for that type, that zoning district. Then they come to plan commission, and they do their preliminary site plan to plan commission. They review it, they send it on to village board. Village board has a chance to look at it and make any comments and concerns on it. Then it goes back through the process again, and there's more information that's required from the developer for the final final plat, and that goes back to plan commission again, and then it goes back to village board. And along the way, there are public hearings, at least one day, is that correct, or two, through the process are required, and all the neighbors are noticed of that, and they are all held at public meetings. So there is a lot of requirements through the plan district development. The village board has a lot of leeway in what they can require and make sure the development is what they would really like to see, what product is used on the building, how big the building is, green space. There's some requirements for green space. There's requirements for parking, lighting, landscaping. There's a lot of stringent rules that the developer has to abide by in a redevelopment of a process. So they would be required to go through, any developer of that property would be required to go through that process.
Just being blatantly honest with folks, I'm not sure there are grant programs that are going to come anywhere close to the value of this property. So I think we're all kind of fooling ourselves if we're going to land on something. We're going to have Brad go up.
What's the value of the property?
Well, the total market value of the whole property was $12.25 million. Have we done an assessment, Tracy, through the whole process of what the land?
It's just looking at August.
Total market value of the sheet that you gave me was $12.25 million.
That's the land. That's the whole.
That's with the property on it, right? And I'm asking Tracy to give us an estimate of the land.
The land, according to Brown County's record, is the land is valued at $264,600, and then the property on it is the improvement is just over $2 million.
Okay, so $250,000 plus. I still don't think we're going to find too many grants that equal that. I think we should try, but I don't think we're going to get there. Mr. Matuzik's comments are well taken, that there are additional costs with maintaining green space there. And we do have a lot of park land in the area. I just don't want people to get their hopes up that, although I think it's a great idea, I can see a very nice area in terms of green space there that I'm not
I don't want you to walk away from this meeting, because the motion on the floor is to send it to committee and for us to consider every possibility for purchasing the land, but that's, in essence, is what's going to happen at the end of the day. I do, though, think if we don't end up purchasing the property, we have a lot of tools that we can use to make sure that the kind of property that you lived with for 35-plus years that you have reported have caused you so many problems will not be the same kind of property that goes in there this time. Between our zoning ordinance and the PDD process, we just have a lot more control over what sorts of things are built. And times have changed in terms of the communication between, I guess at that time, a town board and the residents, and that we don't want something to go in there that you don't like any more than you do. So I think we have some options. We have a history of working with developers so that they're developing in ways that are consistent with the comprehensive plan of the village, and I'm confident that if we go down the path of redeveloping, that we can redevelop in a way that doesn't put you in a as precarious of a position as you've been witnessing throughout the years. Trustees Elder.
Well, I'll piggyback on what Steve had just mentioned. I'm opposed to sending Brad out to try to obtain grants for this type of property, because we don't know the intent of the owner. We don't know if the owner is willing to sell in any way, partially, in the entire site. So without knowing the intentions of the owner, I'm not willing to set Brad out on a work to try to obtain grants. Secondly, I don't think the village has any standing whatsoever to commence any condemnation proceedings in that property. We've been down that road before, and we've lost, and we had a better leg to stand on in that instance. So I guess I look at this situation as the land is currently owned. It's private property, and I don't see that the village has any role in taking that parcel. So I'm going to stand on the side of the property owner in this case, because until we have some indication of what the owner's intentions are, I don't think we should continue down this road.
I don't know this for a fact, but I'm relatively confident that the developer is going to be willing to add some green space to a possible development to be used in some way, shape, or form, like a park. It's not going to be the size park of that entire parcel. But again, times have changed over the years, and I think we've done a much better job of working with developers to make sure that all parties, the village, the residents, and the developer, can live with what's developed in different areas. Trustee Darks, please.
I would like to get a real clear idea of, if we can put a park there, what it would cost us in building a park, gaining the land, and all the lost revenues for like the next 20 years or something, so you can really get an idea of what that's costing us, because it's more than just building the park or 1 year's taxes. It continues. You have to maintain the park, and you have to, and you lose those taxes each year, so it compounds. So I'd like to just have maybe some really rough numbers on that, or what that would look like, just so you really see what you're dealing with in dollars and cents.
Trustee Gass.
No, I mean, presently, I side with Paul to a certain degree. I mean, I think presently the land is in private ownership. I think the village has a vested interest in maintaining it, at least in large part, that parcel in private ownership, because then it stays on the tax rolls. I wasn't, as part of the motion, I wasn't instructing Brad to actually apply for any grants. I just wanted to see what might be available if we could strike up a negotiation with the owner of the property to see if we could acquire some portion of the parcel that we could dedicate to green space and a park. Presently, I don't see in the village budget any significant monies at all to acquire more property and take it off the tax roll. I don't think that's in the citizens' best interest. And it's already been alluded to, Tracy covered it and Steve covered it. When a developer does get ready to redevelop the property, focused on a lot of things for that development, and I have no reason to believe that this board wouldn't be very determined and insistent that something be developed there that is consistent with the neighborhood and satisfies many of your concerns. So my point to Brad was just see if there might be something available that you could maybe acquire a portion of it if the developer is so inclined. I agree that this isn't a proper case for the village to exercise condemnation and eminent domain and try to take the property over. But if we can negotiate something, we can acquire some part of it, that may work. Or definitely within the PDD process, there's a green space requirement in there. I was just saying we might have a little flow in a grant where we could maybe acquire a little bit more and make it a little bit more green on that spot. So.
Trustee Kopich.
Yep.
My understanding of the motion was simply information gathering, not a directive to Brad to apply for grants. I certainly would not preclude any kind of future private development. I think we need to know what is available if we're going to pursue alternatives that are being proposed by the neighbors. So I support the motion.
We're still open?
No, we're not still open, but we can in a moment if you want. Any further comments by the board? Well, Trustee Gunnage.
It appears that we have the current owner in the audience, and I don't know if he wanted to take a minute to kind of share any thoughts he's having, because I'm not aware of any communication between the neighbors and the current owner regarding the future. And I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but too late, as I already have, I guess. But
Mr. Buckle, would you like to make any comments? You're free not to, but would you like to add anything to the discussion? You don't. If it's a hardship, you do not. Can we get him a hand mic? Tracy, do you have the actual microphone back on the table?
Yeah, that one's
on it. Oh, it's on it.
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of the Hello.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Now I'm done. I enjoyed the conversation up to now. I guess some of the people that are here forget that I was here when all the houses were built on that street and when the apartment house was built. And I suppose in my age, my memory might go off a little bit. But as I reply, as I remember it, and certainly everybody on the board can check the records and find out, the whole subdivision of Hilltop Place was all approved at one time by the village board. And with the approval always, that same site where the apartment was always there. Nobody ever built a house on there not knowing that it was there. In fact, I was there for all this, and I do remember that we got people just complaining about us building an apartment building there. The conclusion of it was all in the zoning, and we didn't get permission to build it. And it was another thing I'll never forget about it is that the first two people that we rented to were daughters of a customer who we had built the house for right across the street from it. And they were our first tenants in the apartment building. So now, if any of that can be checked out that you'd like. But if for anybody to come at the meeting tonight and say, nobody ever knew there was ever an apartment building there, that it was ever zoned for that, really that's not quite the truth. And I just wanted to straighten that up first. Having said that all, it is my intention to build a new building there, but we have to really kind of forget everything that was there, and I know that's really impossible for some of the people that are here, and I do understand that, and I feel for that. However, today's codes and requirements, both by the state and by the municipality, are completely different than they were 38 years ago. And while the building that we built did meet all of the codes that were in existence for that building when it was built, and it was kept up that way all the time. We didn't just let it fall apart. When a building gets that old, it does start to fall apart in some areas that you just can't get any better deal out of it. But starting out with a new building, it has to meet today's code, and there is no community in Brown County, at least for sure, that has more control on their PED ordinance than what Alloy does as to what we can do. When we plant the tree, that if it's in the plan, in development approval, and we happen to change the kind of tree that it is, technically the zoning is such that we have to get reapproval from the committee in order to plant a different tree. So they do have plenty of control. Tracy does an excellent job of enforcing it. We have no problem. We've been living with it ever since we built anything in Alloway. And this would be true with the new building. It would be my intention to build a new building there. We're looking at about a 48-unit building instead of a 74-unit. It would be two stories high, and it would have an elevator in it. It would be totally brick on the outside. There would be garages, which is now needed to meet the code requirements for parking and all the things like that. So, but the board will have full approval of everything that goes on in the site before we could ever touch it. So, and our exposure from all, you know, they do quite an in-depth survey of everything that's done, so we realize we have bills like that on that basis. Now, having said that, should satisfy our needs. Listen, I've been in the building all my life, at 60 years, and there's no way I can come there and say, I'm going to build a nice apartment building, all big exterior, individual lawning facilities, elevator in it, and all the things like that, and say that's going to take away your idea of there being an apartment building there. That's not going to happen. And there's no way I can overcome it because apartments in general just do have a character about them that if there's any one time a policeman comes to that apartment building, that's remembered by all the neighbors for whatever reason whatsoever. Not like as if one apartment, one resident gets a squad car in front of that. It just just maybe something slip. So apartments start out at the background. As far as I'm concerned, they'll be higher rents than what they were before. And I feel we're building something way, way better than what was there before, but it still will be an apartment building that's not any change in that. So if there's any other questions, I'd be glad to answer it.
Any questions about the board, Mr. Michael? Any questions from any other visitors?
Not a question, but what I was going to say, why don't you talk to Mr. Marco first? I didn't know he was here.
That's why I sat back here.
That all sounds good, Harry.
I understand. I appreciate that.
Well, I'll wait to see the site plan.
That will be before the board.
Really shouldn't be a law there. It's Mr. Moore and Mr. Mondo, we're going to have to address the board. Sorry, we have rules on how we engage with one another, and we have to address the board. Are there any further questions or comments by anybody visiting today? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Karen DeShadow. I live at 552 Hilltop Drive. I was not prepared to make any statements tonight, but in lieu of Mr. Monko's comments and comments made by the board, I do just have a couple of things to say, and one of them is that, as Mike Moore said, it sounds wonderful. It presents well. It's going to be up to code. But I think this is also something that this has been an ongoing issue that not only Pat and I, but also other neighbors have had with regard to the board enforcing codes. And there was a comment made earlier about enforcing the codes that whatever, if something is built there, that it would be up to code, the codes would be enforced, things like that. And I have some real concerns about the board's ability to enforce codes as they exist now on our streets, Hilltop, Somerset. And so I want to put my full faith and trust in the board that whatever goes up, that you will do your utmost to do your due diligence to enforce whatever those codes are. But I am asking that you also enforce the codes that currently exist on our streets. So I have to say that I don't have a whole lot of faith.
Mrs. DeShetta?
Yes.
So if I understand you correctly, in addition to the building codes that would be in place if the development goes up, you want to call upon the board to enforce the ordinances that we have in the village for
absolutely.
Things like speeding and,
absolutely.
And upkeep of property and
absolutely.
Those sorts of things.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We have sent pictures, we have sent emails, and often we feel as though it's been on deaf ears. And we've gotten more and more frustrated. And so I am appealing to your sense of responsibility to your current residents, the taxpayers, that you also consider we who take good care of our properties, we who pay our taxes, we want every resident to feel the same way, and when they don't, we are looking to the board to follow through on making sure those ordinances are upheld, and people are called upon to make whatever changes they can. And we consistently see issues with neighbors. And recently, my husband put something out on the street, and the following day, and we had no problem with getting the letter because we knew that somebody might object to us having something up, but we abide by the rules, with the exception of that one time that we had something out sooner than it should have been. I would hope that that's happening with every resident. I'm not sure it is. And then following through with fines, whatever it is. But I'm doubtful, I will be honest.
Thank you. So anyone else would like to speak with regard to this issue? All right, we'll take up the rules. There's a motion and a second on the floor. Is that correct, Mr. Mayor? Further discussion amongst the board? Trustee Gass?
Just in response to Mr. Shadow's comment, I mean, the board and staff will take, you know, this whole plan district development concept and ordinance enforcement in that process very seriously. But the one thing I did want to make sure that you know about, and you'll get notice of it too, is it's a collaborative process. You know, when these plans and drawings start coming to the planning commission and come to the board, you'll get notice of those things, and there'll be public hearings, and you know, please be mindful of that too, because your input is very valuable in that process. So we understand, you know, what's important to you and to the residents in the neighborhood. So, you know, we look forward to that collaboration as well.
And I'd like to add, the collaboration extends beyond the time that development takes place. With regard to Ms. DeShadow's comments about us enforcing our existing ordinances, this board made a decision a couple of years ago to either enforce the ordinances that we had in the books, that's Mr. Roberts' job as being the, you know, the bad guy. He's probably the guy who sent you the letter. Or take them off the books. I mean, there's no use having ordinances on the books if we're not going to enforce them. And we've heard it from both sides. We've heard it from residents who said, look, I've got people next door who aren't keeping up their property. You're not doing enough. And then we've heard it from residents who got letters like you got saying, why are you harassing me for putting my garbage out too early or putting the wrong kind of garbage out on the wrong day?
That comes on agenda.
Exactly. We're doing the best that we can in enforcing the ordinances that are on the books. But this is also a collaborative effort. If it's not working in a certain area of the village, we hope that folks from that area would come to the board and let us know we're not doing a good job enforcing these types of ordinances in this area. And we will do our best to make sure that that's changed. One of the problems that we've run into during the past couple of years after we've made the decision to enforce our ordinances is a lot of the ordinances have to do with aesthetics. And the trailer ordinance is a prime example. It took us a couple of years to decide on exactly what that ordinance should look like, because it involved aesthetics. One person has kind of a rusty boat parked in their driveway that they love and they will use every summer. The neighbors can't stand it. It's their boat. I mean, where's the line between something that just doesn't look very good and something that's really a public nuisance that we should have an ordinance against? And those are the kinds of issues we've been struggling with, but those are exactly the kind of issues where we need public input. So your point is well taken, and we've heard that before. We'll do our best to make sure that we do enforce the ordinances that are on the books, but we rely on a relationship with the residents in order to make sure that that's as effective as possible. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
Utilities in the country that can claim that kind of performance.
Beginning with this year, the organization looked at trying to develop a vision to help guide the organization moving forward. And the vision here is a community leader and partner, providing innovative and sustainable water solutions, practicing sound environmental and financial stewardship. Fairly broad, but it helps help us make decisions on where we want to go. I promised I'd get back to you on the new water. GBMSD, or the Green Bay Metropolitan Stewards District, that is still our official name. We have taken on the brand of New Water. We did an evaluation in 2012, and at the end of 2012, our commission adopted the new brand. Basically, we saw, as we looked across the industry and as we were going to be different in this community and working with others than just our direct customers, is that people want to talk about water. They don't want to talk about sewage, wastewater. Water is the common theme that people have. And so we thought that would better help get a message as we're starting to talk to people that are not our traditional customers. The new comes from Northeast Wisconsin. We've heard that before with some other entities, New North, New Zoo. And then new in that we basically what we produce, we take material that others consider to be a waste and reclaim what we can reclaim from it and then produce clean water that we put back into the environment. So when we look at water quality, and this is a different focus for us as we move forward, what's at stake? And this is from April of 2011. About 16 to 17 times a year, more than 80% of the sediment, phosphorus, and other pollutants that make it into the bay from the Fox River come in those 16 or 17 high rain, high runoff events. And for those of you that know this area, this is not what it's supposed to look like. There's an awful lot of sediment, an awful lot of phosphorus, a lot of nitrogen that's making its way down there, primarily from a non-point source, whether it be municipal non-point source, stormwater runoff, or non-point that's coming off of urban or rural land. One of the tools we start gearing up for this year and will continue over the next several years is adaptive management. It's something that's in the code that governs our phosphorus discharges, and that's initially where it's going to start, is discharge of phosphorus. Working with the DNR, have put together what we envisioned a cost-effective approach for the entire community to tackle phosphorus. It's a voluntary option in compliance with our code, and it allows us basically to take and get the highest return on our investment because wastewater treatment facilities such as ours are pretty far out on the cost-effectiveness curve, and so we were looking at well over $220 million of investment in our two facilities to remove what would be about 3% of the phosphorus that's conveyed from the Fox River into the bay. And there is a more cost-effective way to do that by working with non-point for our customers, and that's what we're trying to do. We are preparing to have a pilot program going in 2014, and we're working with other entities throughout Brown County. Another thing that's going on for us, and it will be for the next probably 4 or 5 years, is our resource recovery and electrical energy project, R2E2 as we've called it. Basically, there were three reasons why our current solids handling system needed to be replaced. It is just about 40 years old, and while we've done a good job of maintaining that equipment, it is obsolete and wearing out. Also, the environmental regulations have changed quite a bit in those 40 years, and we're no longer able to meet the current regulatory issues with facilities. And then also we have capacity issues in that facility. One of the key things for this project is to recover as much as we can. One of the things we're looking to recover is the energy value of the material that we receive, and the project is planned to cut our purchase of outside electricity and natural gas in half through recovering energy from the material that we receive. We're underway with the design. We've started that in July of 2012. It'll continue through the middle of 2014. We have started with the procurement of the major, one of the major pieces of equipment, the thermal oxidation or incinerator unit and all the heat exchangers and air pollution control equipment. That bid is due next week. And we should open that up, and then we can finish the design once we know what we have, as which vendor we're going to actually select. We did a value engineering project, and Craig Barrett participated in kind of sitting through some of that work. We very much appreciated that, and we hired a consulting engineer to come in and take a look at the work that's being done by our existing engineer. They recommended a number of improvements, some that we've taken, and we have had a minimum $2 million worth of reductions in cost, and as we still continue to look to implement more of their recommendations as we go on. That facility, the R2E2 facility, is due to go online at the end of 2017, so we're still a ways away. Another thing that we did since I last saw you is working on rate methodology. Our current methodology we had in place, how we charge you, our customers, have been in place since the middle of 1970s. It's a pretty standard methodology. It served us well, but we looked to see if there was some way to do it differently. We had a customer stakeholder group that we brought in several times and got presented information, got feedback. The new methodology has some similarities in terms of how we will develop the five billing parameters that we use, but we added a fixed charge. So we're taking some of the cost out. It's not a new cost to the process, but it's taking some of the variable charges out and putting it into fixed charge. We're looking at about 15% of our total cost that would go into this fixed charge, and basically to help cover the capital and debt payment that we have when we see significant fluctuations from year to year, whether it's a wet year, dry year. Some industry decides to increase production, reduce production. It takes some of that variability out, and it is just a small part of it. And we are implementing that now as part of our 2014 budget. So priorities that we identified for our commission in 2014 are five. Implement the Lower Fox River Basin Water Protection Programs. We will be doing that for a long time. Continuing to use asset management to improve service and reduce our cost. We've made some significant strides in that area. We have a lot of assets, well over $500 million of fixed assets. Become the preeminent source of water information in the area. Not that we're going to generate all this information, but people do want to know about water. There's a lot of information that's out there that we either create or can help to make available to others, and that's, we see that as a role for us. Including sustainability in all decisions, using a triple bottom line approach to protect the environment. And then for us, enhancing safety and health management systems. We do run a fairly dangerous business. A lot of rotating equipment, a lot of high voltage electricity, and that continued focus on safety. I show you something that we update each year. It's a sewer service charge comparison. This is a typical household in our service area. We participate in a national survey each year through the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. They ask us to work with our largest community, which is Green Bay, City of Green Bay, so that's the one that we use. The green line that you see, which is on top, is the index for EPA's Region 5, which is Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Indiana, Michigan. So it's the states in our general area. And then the red line are the charges, the annual charges for City of Green Bay. So we tend to be below, always have been below the average, although we are starting to creep up. So as we look at our 2014 budget, moving on to that, what are some of the drivers that are going to tell us what our budget is going to look like? The biggest one for us is a 21% loss in our biochemical oxygen demand, which is the major organic loading. It is coming from one significant industry in De Pere that has it's a paper recycling business that has chosen to put in pretreatment. They're putting that in right now. Should be done with that by middle of next year. That's a huge, huge loss, and we're working to try to see how we can recover from that. The R2E2 project, this almost $150 million capital project, we've got the debt that we're working on, and also other trying to keep other essential capital projects moving. And then to begin the adaptive management planning so that we don't let what we think is a significant cost savings opportunity pass with focus on these other projects. So with wrapping up, new water flows and loads, this is really a summary to show the red line is the flow, kind of goes up or down a little bit, whether it's a dry year. Total suspended solids, the green line, has been fairly consistent, slightly downward trend. And the significant one that you're seeing is the blue line, the significant dip down from 2013 to 2014. As we look at our proposed expenses at a fairly high level, our operations and maintenance costs in the 2014 budget were just about $100,000 more than we were in the 2013 budget. And in debt service and annual capital, again, we're about $800,000 more. As you're starting to see continual buildup towards the R2E2 project. So in general, we're about $900,000 more for total expenses for 2014 budget than we had for 2013 budget. When you look at how that kind of plays out, you've got the capital and debt service at 41%. Overall cost, salaries and benefits at about 29%, and then it moves down to energy at about 12%, and the other issues. By the way, what you're going to see in the next several years is the slice of the pie for capital and debt service, I can't go back there, is going to get larger. So as we look down at where's the money coming from, what customers, City of Green Bay, City of De Pere are two largest dischargers, followed by Ashwaubenon, and then yourself, Village of Howard, Village of Bellevue, and then Procter & Gamble. And then we also have our other customers, the our other customers, the other townships and villages are 9% of that total. I'm not quite sure why we're... So, kind of in summary for you is the proposed municipal rate. What you're seeing is the 2013 rate came in the middle, and then our 2014 rate is right next to it. And then the percentage changes, you can see the significant change, the increase in biochemical oxygen demand as a result of the reduction of the load. And then the others are to some extent coming from the increase of the project from the R2E2, which is going to significantly impact suspended solids and DOD. So with that, open it up for comments or questions that you might have.
Any questions from the board?
Yes, Trustee Green.
I was just going to say, there's a letter in our packet from you and from DPW Baird.
Yeah.
Are you ready to address these tonight?
I'm not ready to address all of them tonight. We are working on a response. We're going to get, we have a commission meeting next Wednesday. We're going to have it to our commission by Monday. And I said to Craig that I would send it to him at the same time, so you'll have it. But we can talk in general about some of the, but I don't have a formal response right now.
Okay.
I'd be willing to
listen to you talking to
them. But I don't want that to preclude the answers in writing either, because I think our residents deserve this. I'm getting an amazing amount of questions on this.
Okay. So. I'll run through as much as I can remember. I've been working on this last week and a half or so. Talk about the rate increase, the 13% rate increase. At this point, we're at about 12.5%, pretty close to the 13, but we've made some reductions since last information that you had from Craig. One of the things that we had talked about with the R2E2 project, and it was not just for the R2E2 project, it was all of our capital that we had envisioned going forward, was we were looking at about a 9 to 10% annual rate increase for 13, 14, 15, and 16. That was the plan when we talked about in 2012. What we talked about was it was basically driving revenue. So 9 to 10% rate increase in order to drive the revenue. Some of the things that we've seen in 2013 and planning for 14 is we've seen a steady decline in flows and loads. And so even though the rate increases are higher, we basically as I've looked at the numbers, we're behind on where we needed to be in terms of total revenue requirements in order to support the capital project. So
why is that? Why is that?
Well,
is there pre-treating going on? Are folks doing something that they're just not putting up with it, so they're failing?
It happens all the time. You know, when customers look at people who've been reducing, recycling, reclaiming. I mean, that's been going on for the last 20 years. And when there are tipping points and for this industry in DePere, they looked at their business case and finally got to the point where they said they wanted to make they're making a pretty significant capital investment because they believe they can recover their costs. So these are business decisions that industries are making. We certainly don't want them to pre-treat. That's our business, is to treat wastewater. But they make a business decision, and then we have to live with it.
And is that what you attribute most of this adjustment to some businesses pre-treating, or is it some other phenomenon of people just not using so much water? Or
it's not so much water. People are using less water. You're seeing it in your water utility, but in general, people are still discharging the same amount of solid material. Matter of fact, it may be going up as people are using more garbage grinders than they used to. But what we're seeing in this area we had been pretty dependent on some wet industry, which provided, whether it be paper making or food processing. And so we have seen downturns either in their economy, or they have decided to do more pre-treatment, and that just continues. And this industry that we lost was the largest discharger of organic waste to the system. So hard to lose a big industry like that.
But those are the industries that you're most likely to lose because they can recover the cost. There's a major investment in what they're paying to send it to you, and if they can figure out a way to invest in capital themselves, they can.
Right. And they've been doing it for a long time. I mean, we have smart business people that look and figure out what's the best way that they can lower their cost, and they figured that out. So, in general, the 13% rate increase is not as much a deviation from where we needed to get to in terms of revenue. Matter of fact, we're probably recovering less revenue than we should be, but it is because of the reduction. I mean, a 21% reduction in VOD is a huge hit. I think of that 13% is probably somewhere in the vicinity of 8% of of that cost is due to when they reduce their load. We reduce all of our variable costs that we can, power, chemicals, natural gas. The fixed costs are there, and just like any other utility, when the load goes away, the fixed costs stay. So in the short term, I mean, certainly by this industry letting us know this now, we are not building the R2B2 project to accommodate them. So we were able to reduce the size of that R22 project because they were able to let us know before we actually invested that capital. So I will get you a better discussion of that item.
Okay, we have a couple of questions. Sure. Trustee Coker?
Sure.
Could you comment on what's on the horizon beyond 2014? You foresee additional resource recovery pre-treatment dropping off of additional industrials? There's been some coverage recently with the so-called dead zone in the Bay. Was that something that might create some unanticipated cost or participation by the Met evaluating and correcting whatever all of those causes are?
I'll try to think of the two things that, one, all of the significant industries are looking at either reducing the discharge, recovering, reclaiming, or pre-treating. They're always looking at that. So it's just, and we have conversations with the industry, but it really just depends if they're owned by a larger corporation, when that larger corporation decides that they want to make the business case to make the investment, because these are significant investments for these industries. So it's going to happen. Yeah. If it has been happening, it's going to continue. They don't tell us much in advance, but the hypoxia or dead zone in the Bay is something that's been identified. It is comes as a result of just all of the. The slide I showed you at the beginning is a pretty significant reason why this happens. That's one of the opportunities that we looked at with this adaptive management, is to try to get the benefit for the environment at a lower cost to our customers by working out in the watershed and reducing some of that pollution. So I don't see that causing us additional cost. I think if you, again, looked at the, I don't know if anyone's going to ever be able to dissect the total cost or cause or who's to blame for it, but the discharge of the material that we discharge the Fox River that makes it to Bay is an incredibly small slice of what's coming down the Fox River from other sources.
Trustee Green?
What's allowing business and industry to run it? They must feel cheaper and more effective than a utility can. I'm just perplexed. Are they governed under a different set of regulations than the utility, or how does that work?
No. These businesses are look pretty tight at their return on investment. They, most of them, if you can't justify a project with less than 5-year payback, they're probably not going to do it. Can they get money cheaper than us? I would doubt it. They just look at their cost, and they either can reduce the material or they could do pretreatment. And I'm not privy to how they do their cost analysis, and this particular industry decided that they wanted to invest probably what is in excess of $7 million to provide that pretreatment. They feel that they're certainly going to get a recovery on that.
And they're governed by the exact same regulations you are?
Well, they will pre-treat. Mm-hmm. They're not going to discharge to the receiving water. They're going to take out the high-strength material, and then they will discharge it back into the sewer, and then we'll treat the rest of their flow. So they're not going and say, we're not going to come to New York anymore. We're just going to get a discharge and go right to the river. No one's doing that today.
Right, but that's a function that you would have provided.
It is a function prior. That you would provide, yes.
Okay.
But I think the point remains that the more industries that do that, those that remain will do it, they don't want to pay more.
Right.
Which, if I have it right, it's going to make it more lucrative for the next one to then go off. And I just am completely perplexed at how they can do it more cost effectively, they feel, than a utility can. I don't understand the nuances.
Well, part of it might just be control, that since we don't know what the rates are going to go up, because they are affected by how many customers are contributing and the amounts they're contributing. They all have control over that, so they don't have to guess every year, well, until the numbers come out as to what their rates are going to be, because they'll be taking care of it in-house. I mean, not the entire
Gray water and cost for capital. Right. That's what we look at as well.
Okay.
And it is uncertainty. Certainly, that's a part of it. I mean, when they do their business model, they're making some assumptions as to where our rates are going to go. Again, these businesses are smart business people, and they really look at it hard. But answer your question, I mean, it's a numbers game. Rate is cost divided by number of units. Number of units goes down, the cost will go down some, rate's going to go up. So that's what we work on. Let me continue.
Yeah, please.
The second one on the annual cost to LA customers, that I've talked with Craig about that. I've made some assumptions about, we look at Green Bay at about 64,000 gallons for a typical household, and we just kind of took that across all of the customers. It was just impossible to look at. So that's how we did our evaluation, and Craig's evaluation, you know, that's your evaluation, and we're actually going to just stop using that slide because we can't make the calculation for every community. So I don't dispute your numbers. And I mean, our cost, when we look at what we charge you, we know what we charge you, and then what your costs are, and then how many actual residences. That's probably a calculation we shouldn't be doing. So I would just defer and agree with Craig on that, and we certainly we watch our costs, and we understand instead of us being 50% of your typical residence cost, if we're 60%, that's what we are. In the cost of debt service, the R2E2 project, we're at the very early end of it. We've taken out one loan for $20 million. We've still got about $130 million yet to borrow. That loan, we ended up with a 4.4% interest rate on a 25-year note. We did not go through the Clean Water Fund because we needed the money sooner than the Clean Water Fund could get to us. We are meeting actually tomorrow with the DNR to see how we can work through the Clean Water Fund, but we anticipate, I think in answer to this question, by the time we're fully funded with the R2E2 project, there'll be about $11 million annual debt service on that project. So I think the $8 million or $9 million is low. But it really will depend on where we can borrow money for. We do have a AAA bond rating, so we're going to get it as good as anyone could if we had to go out in the marketplace. We will use the Clean Water Fund when it's possible. The Interceptor Cost Recovery Fund, it was one that was set up probably over 25 years ago. It's a way, when we build a new interceptor or extend an interceptor, again, an interceptor is one where we own a pipe if two communities or more discharge into it. So if it's owned by the city of De Pere and only the city of De Pere waste, it's a city of De Pere sewer. Once the city of De Pere and the town of Ledge come together, then it can become an interceptor. So our customers will ask us to extend an interceptor periodically, and so we'll have agreements with them, we'll determine capacity, use agreements, and then we typically will build it, finance it, and then charge back to those specific customers the cost for that interceptor. That money goes into the interceptor cost recovery fund as they pay their bill, and then we typically take that money out to pay the debt service on the interceptor. The
is there any surplus on that fund beyond debt service?
The fund, when we actually used to make money on interest rates, did generate money for interest. You know, we're not getting much on interest on our investments now. The number here is $430 million. It's not $430 million. It's $30 million. I think the four and the dollar sign were transposed. That fund is about $30 million in it. The commission does have a reserve policy for the interceptor cost recovery with the intent to try to keep a minimum of $20 million in that fund, or about 20% of the cost of the interceptor assets. And so we have been using that fund when we had to do some work to replace some interceptors on around Highway 41 when it was being redone. We used some of the money from that interceptor cost recovery reserve to pay for our share. The DOT paid for about 90% of it.
So they ask that you have $20 million in that fund at all times.
That's the
prepay for these interceptor projects and then get paid back by the...
Yeah. We the way most of them work that are above $1 million, we don't tend to take a loan out for less than $1 million. It's just the transaction costs are too much. So when we enter an agreement, build an interceptor, typically go to the Clean Water Fund, the state, for the loan program. We then take out a 20-year loan and are paying that back, and then at the same time, our customers are paying us back on a similar 20-year loan. The money goes into the interceptor cost recovery fund and typically goes back out to pay the debt service. And yes, there is a surplus. It has stayed right about $30 million for the last 3 or 4 years.
My only suggestion there is we need to find other sources like that, to fund some of this debt service for R2E2, because the problem we got, is we're looking at a 5-year budget cycle with a minimum of a 9% forecasted increase per year. That's 45% in 5 years. And who knows what it's going to be after that? I mean, it could be 100% within 10. I mean, we got people we got to respond to, too. And, I mean, every source like this needs to be looked at to at least mitigate some of that debt service, because our people can't afford it, especially if more and more industrial customers leave, the new water pie. I mean, there's going to be fewer of us remaining to pay for it. There's going to be all kinds of problems.
And I don't disagree with you on that. It has been long policy for the sewage district, and it goes back to our customers that we pretty much have been on a pay-as-you-go basis, and we don't have a significant amount of reserves. I think the amount of money that's in the reserves for those interceptors, even though they do last a long time, typically 60, 80, 100-year-old, 100-year, at some point they are going to have to be replaced. And having some reserves to replace that, I think, is a prudent discussion. If you use the money for something else, then how do we bring it back when you need to? That is certainly will be brought up to the commission, and that will be a commission decision as to how they want to use the reserves the district has.
I agree. That's only $10 million, but... And so in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot, but if you've got a $10 million cushion, then you've got $30 million in reserve, that can go down to $20
million.
Yeah. It's better than nothing.
And I sat through the public meetings where people said, why didn't you have the $150 million in the bank? Well, our customers wanted us to use that money and didn't want us to have money in the bank. So we do have to find a balance, and I do think that we need to keep some money in reserve for those projects. We've got, within the next 6 years, the very large diameter pipes, we call them our tunnels, running down Quincy Street, Main Street, which are 80 years old, are going to need to be rebuilt. So we look to where we're going to use our reserves, that's one of the places. So
you have a pretty much an equal flow of new projects coming in with regard to interceptors as you do of paying out the debt service on old projects.
We are
paying out the debt service, it's all.
Yeah.
It's all income, all revenue for you, right?
They're kind of running in parallel for now, but yeah, it's going to start. We haven't been building a lot of new interceptors lately.
So you anticipate that the incoming is going to exceed the...
No, I think the incoming is going to be below the outgoing.
By incoming, I mean new projects. You know,
I do not see a lot of new projects coming in for interceptors, at least in the near future.
Okay, now you've lost me. So you've got a $10 million cushion over what you need to keep in that fund.
Correct.
And there are interceptor projects that are going to sort of run out in terms of your debt service. So you're going to be, that revenue that's coming in from those customers is going to be increasing your revenue. You won't have any debt service to pay out as a result.
They're running right about the same. So if we have a 20-year debt, the customers lag that by about a year. So we take a 20-year loan with our customers. So when the debt finishes, the payment will finish the next year.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
No, you may not. Not right now.
Okay. Thank you. On the budgeted O&M costs, we continue to look at the time that we looked at this, our revenue was running about on budget. Since then, our revenue is below budget, so we are not above budget, not projected to be above budget on income, and we do manage our expenses to stay as close as we can. So we are going out to the commission next week with our actual through the end of September and our projected year end for that. So I guess for the other points on the last page, electrical power, WPS, you know, we're a large power user. Their requested rate was 7.4%. We track requested and actual, kind of looked at it, and then we try to hedge that a little bit. We went with 5.1% until we had better information from WPS. They have, the Public Service Commission has not ruled that, so we're going to talk to WPS in early November before we go to the budget for the public hearing, and we'll adjust it as much as we can. But what they last told us was 7.4%. We don't believe they're going to get 7.4, but that's what they're asking for. Chemical usage, we look at our chemicals each year, and it really depends on what's going on. So, I mean, what happened last year is good information, but it is not a predictor of what's going to happen next year.
Less chemicals because you have
less
because of the load reduction? Or
not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, there are a lot of, we use a lot of different chemicals, whether it be for polymers or ferrochloride. We use a lot of chemicals in the facility.
I don't understand that, Tom. I mean,
yeah.
By your own admission, you lose a customer, you lose lots of revenue. Now you gain a little bit in terms of expenses go down, which is why you adjusted for the R2E2 project. But why would chemicals not be in that mix?
One example is with the BOD load that we get from the industry. With that going away, it changes our ability to do biological phosphorus removal, which we pretty much do for free almost. We will move from biological to chemical phosphorus removal, and so we have to add ferrochloride in order to remove the phosphorus.
So because you have less load, you can't use a certain method that's free. You now have to use a method that involves chemicals. Who knew? Why is that?
I could spend here a long time and go through the process and methodology, but there you generate in the sewers with this waste coming in, you need a BOD to phosphorus ratio in order to drive this biological phosphorus removal, which we really like having. When the BOD goes down, it throws that whole process off, and that biological process doesn't work. We are working as actively as we can to reduce the amount of phosphorus coming in the facility, but there's only so much we can do. Compensation.
compensation, and I know we've talked about this before, we do have a pay pay system. We have not had a structure adjustment for 3 years. 3 years ago, we said we were 5% ahead of the market. When we talked with our consultant this year, he said you probably could, but we're going to hold another year on the market adjustment, but still our employees within their pay grade. If they are eligible for advancement, we do that.
Have you ever, has there ever been a year when you haven't done that?
Not since I've been there.
And I adamantly disagree with that.
And I understand
the economy that we've been through. We've all made adjustments for our staff here, especially the non-represented staff. They've gotten zero for many years, and I just don't know how you can justify that, especially with a report that says you're above average and you should come home.
We are no longer above average.
I know, but when you were above average, you still offered some sort of compensation and increases, and that's unjustifiable.
I understand that. Our training, you know, we look at our training, we've adjusted our training, try to keep our staff. We have a fairly highly sophisticated staff, highly educated staff, and our training, we believe, is appropriate for the requirements we have for our staff. Contracted services, again, we have projects that are coming up that we need to start the planning now so we can be in design in a couple of years. So that's why you're seeing contracted services plus the work that we're doing with adaptive management. We will be using outside consultants.
And in terms of the budgeting of operational expenses, what happens, for example, I mean, say budget spells out, just to make an easy number, $100,000 for electricity. And after the rate gets established, and maybe after the adoption of the budget, it's $50,000 in actual expense. What happens to
the if we actually have a surplus at the end of the year, and I mean, there's a lot of factors, looks at depreciation and a number of other things, but if we actually have a surplus at the end of the year, it does go into a rate stabilization reserve that the district has, and the commission then can use that. We currently have $1 million in that rate stabilization reserve. We did not add anything to that. There was not any money to add to that in 2012. Still too early to tell where we're going to finish on 2013. So that money is in a reserve that the commission then can use to stabilize rates going forward, and it's kept and segregated there.
Thank you.
Is there anything else?
Could you tell us about the general fund transfer?
The general fund transfer? Which?
On your budget page, let's see, page 2.
Oh, I think I know which one. We collect for debt a year in advance of when we have to pay it. And that's required so that we don't come back and put our costs on the property tax roll. So we're required to certify each year at the end of September that we have enough money in our debt service reserve to pay for our debt for the last debt payment we have in 2012 or 13, and then all the payments we have to make in 14. So we're collecting a year in advance and kind of throw